Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
Well, I didn't watch the debate. I watched portions of the Tucker Carlson interview. The thing is, I thought that Tucker was doing more work than Trump was. Tucker was a little bit too heavy-handed as an interviewer. Like, for example, when he asks the do you think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself question, he just lards it on with so much extraneous information about, you know, oh, isn't it funny that Bill Barr didn't investigate this? Oh, isn't it funny? Isn't it blah, 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 blah. You know, as if he wants to, like, massage Trump in one direction or another. I don't know. Just let Trump talk.
I like that the only substantive thing Trump said in response to the Epstein question was, yeah, well, he was a regular fixture in Palm Beach. It's like, oh yeah, I knew Jeffrey. We used to hang out. He was everywhere. Like, he was the man.
You're asking him about Jeffrey Epstein. Like, I can think of some other questions I might ask Trump about Epstein rather than, do you think he killed himself? Which is, what do you think he's going to say?
And Trump, who is a very obviously a chaotic and digressive speaker, he had a lot of message discipline in that interview because he turned Carlson's rather, you know, convoluted question about, oh, William Barr and blah, 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 and the investigation. Trump was just like, well, Epstein, regular feature at Palm Beach. Also, William Barr didn't investigate the election fraud. He said he would, but he never did. I thought he was my friend. He just makes it about election fraud.
You can't trust any of them. They're all animals. And, you know, if they'll interfere on this, they'll interfere on anything. I didn't watch the debate, and I realized that as the co-host of a sort of left-wing culture and politics podcast, maybe it's my obligation to start watching some of these things. But I really, the idea of just any Republican debate, but especially one without Trump, is so unpleasant to me. I mean, you're sick, though. You love these things.
Oh, I would put it a bit differently. I think the prospect of a Republican debate with Donald Trump is very exciting because you know it's going to be entertaining.
Right.
And I had high hopes for this one. And I mean, you could probably take any random 10 or 15 seconds of the Trump interview, which like was a lower energy interview than normal. And yeah, like you said, Carlson, it wasn't just the Epstein thing. Carlson also kept trying to bait Trump by being like, so do you think there's going to be a civil war? Like just his...
Do you think they're going to kill you? Why wouldn't they kill you? Serious questions.
You know, Carlson with his brow furrowed and that permanent sort of expression of skeptical concern, you know, it's going to get stuck that way. It kind of already is. But yeah, I don't know. All of like Tucker's like, you know, based questions didn't really go anywhere. But I did think it was funny when, you know, Trump was talking about did you see the part where he was talking about Kamala Harris and like her elliptical speaking style, you know, the bus goes here, the bus goes there, because that's what buses do.
She has some bad moments. Her moments are almost as bad as his. I think his are worse, actually.
Yeah, but she seems pretty senile too.
She speaks in rhyme, you know. It's weird, but she has bad moments. And
in rhyme. What do you...
Well, the way she talks, the bus will go here and then the bus will go there because that's what buses do. And it's weird.
I did think that was pretty funny. And then there was another part where he was talking about a random guy on the debate stage, like probably the lesser of the two, who the hell is that guy, guys, Hutchinson, who I guess is the former governor of Arkansas, not even the current governor of Arkansas. And, you know, Trump made some offhand comment about, oh, there's people who shouldn't even be running for president. And Carlson was like, oh, who do you mean? And he's like, well, I probably shouldn't say. And then he's like, I probably won't matter too much. I mean, there's this guy, Hutchinson, I call him Ada, but that's not his name.
Well, I don't want to really use names, but it wouldn't matter too much. A guy like, I call him Ada Hutchinson. It's Asa, but I call him Ada.
Why do you call him Ada?
I could tell you, but I don't want to get myself in a little trouble. But he's weak and pathetic, and he was, I never understood the guy, I never knew him. He was the governor of Arkansas, not a very popular guy. I don't know how he, but that state is such a great state. The people are so incredible in that state, and they love me and I love them. How does this guy get elected governor of Arkansas? But he's nasty always and has been.
And then Carlson's like, why do you call him that? And Trump is like, he's like, oh, I probably shouldn't say because I will get in little trouble. It's like Trump is his speaking style is so eccentric and unusual. There's no one else who talks like that unless you're, you know, the god James Austin Johnson from SNL. I don't think anybody can do a real impression of Trump. And thinking about it, I really think it's one of the reasons why he continues to be the face of our age, in, you know, not for the better, obviously, but it's why he is so dominant, you know, within right-wing politics, but also, like, hating him is the entire fulcrum of liberal politics as well. Like, there's, like, nothing programmatic, or, like, it's just, you know, orange man bad, and it has been for some time. And when you think about it, you know, novelty really is the most precious commodity in the social media age. Nothing is able to retain any aura of novelty or, you know, exceptionalism, because there's just such a deluge of information all the time. Like, the most significant news events often fade from the news cycle within 2 or 3 days. You know, things get memeified so quickly. You know, you talked, you know, I remember an observation you made during the pandemic that's very emblematic of this, is the way that Tiger King, right, which was just this, like, vaguely amusing trifle that we all watched because we were stuck indoors, and it was on the TV. You know, that was, like, within weeks. It's like, oh yeah, there's going to be a biopic with Nicolas Cage, which I think fortunately did not end up getting made.
But another one did, though. Perhaps you recall walking the streets of Toronto last summer and seeing the ads for, God, what the fuck were their names? Joe and Carol, that had John Cameron Mitchell and, you know, from Saturday Night Live, I forget her name, Hallelujah, you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, Kate McKinnon.
Yes, correct. Ding, ding, ding.
Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton in the film, I assume.
Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton as Carol Baskin, yes, yes.
Oh, right, yeah. But you made the point about Tiger King, right? That this made the journey, I mean, there wasn't even a journey. It just, like, things no longer have a life, they don't exist as part of, like, a cultural life world that's allowed to just, like, sit and be something. And then, oh, 10 years later, it's like, oh, this is now a nostalgic artifact, and we're going to make a sort of amusing, you know, Hulu biopic out of it or something. There's no interim stage anymore. Things just are instantly memeified and turned into streaming fodder or whatever. Now, I do actually have a point here to come back to Trump. Trump is so, like, he's so weird and bizarre, and you cannot replicate what he does and what he sounds like. I feel like that is one of the reasons why he is such an all-pervasive figure, and why, like, he somehow manages to, like, Twitter jokes and stuff, like, even the best ones, like, they stop being funny very quickly now. Trump, like, he's just, he manages, I don't know, maybe it's, like, heretical, you're not allowed to say that Trump is funny. He's clearly very funny. And I feel like he stays in the news cycle because there's a novelty about him, and there continues to be, that there isn't too very much else. So to turn back to the debate, I mean, I think you said, you know, a debate without Donald Trump is not something you, you know, would particularly look forward to. And I have to say, I really had high hopes for this one because, you know, as part of my job, I do have to follow these people. I'm, like, all up on the Ron DeSantis shit. Like, how many staffers he's laid off this week, like, which fucking based Groyper adjacent National Review dweeb he's had to fire for, like, a Nazi meme in this particular week or whatever. Vivek Ramaswamy, Nikki Haley, I'm all over this stuff. And yeah, this debate was a really, really interesting, like, controlled experiment in what happens when you have conservative politics without Donald Trump. And honestly, if you took out the bits that were, like, the topical references, like, there was one sort of question about, like, directly about Donald Trump and things like that, the various cryptic allusions made to Trump, if you took out that stuff, it was basically a Republican debate from 2012. And in being that, was a reminder in how, like, fucking boring and weird conservative politics used to be, and how in so many areas, the essence of conservative politics is just being as unappealing as possible. Like, when you strip away the artifice, when you don't have a sort of, like, weird demagogic carnival barker figure like Donald Trump, who has this reputation that he's built painstakingly over decades in the tabloid press and on TV. If you don't have that, conservative politics is talking about the deficit. It's talking in the most, like, absurd, stupid, cookie-cutter platitudes about how much you love America and how it's the greatest nation ever. And, yeah, and it's talking about the Constitution. Chris Christie couldn't stop talking about the Constitution. Mike Pence fucking loves the Constitution. The other guy that's the, like, you know, who's that guy? This guy, Doug Burgum, who's the governor of North Dakota. At one point, he produced a physical copy of the Constitution from his pocket, and he started waving it about. They were talking about, the opening segment was all about, like, the economy, And they were talking about, we have to get the fucking deficit under control. Nikki Haley, her big applause line, or like her canned line that was supposed to yield applause, was, I think it's time for an accountant in the White House.
Hell yeah.
She, you know,
I've been saying that.
Yeah, I say it often. Chris Christie was saying, we cannot sit by any longer and allow the kind of spending that's been going on in Washington. DeSantis, America cannot succeed when the Congress spends trillions and trillions of dollars. Mike Pence, one of his lines, I was the first person in this race to say we've got to deal with a long-term national debt problem. And like, look,
I actually said that first, to be clear. I'm not in the race. But I think I was a forerunner of that, actually.
Yeah, I often wake up in cold sweats at night, repeating the phrase to myself, the national debt, the national debt, the national debt, and I'm unable to sleep for hours at a time. But look, I'm loath to agree with her about anything, but the Washington Post had this sort of live blog where their columnists were reacting to the debate, and there was some pretty funny stuff in there, like, it's very funny, but I'm loath to agree with her about anything. But Megan McArdle, you know, the Washington Post columnist whose whole thing is like, anything you do to try to make things better, like, you know, a law that will like make it illegal to, I don't know, make buildings that fall over. The thing is, you know, yeah, buildings falling over kills people, but if you have laws to stop it, who's to say those laws won't kill more people? I hope everyone listening is familiar with Megan McArdle. Anyway, she made this comment that I think is absolutely right. She said, Mike Pence talks about restoring fiscal responsibility, traditional establishment message that has a voting base of like me and the staffers at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. And I just want to say, where's the lie? She's exactly right. All this kind of just humorless, like anti-fun, oh, we need to get serious about how unsustainable Social Security and Medicare are. It sucks. And the debate was mostly not very entertaining. The one exception, like the one person on stage who clearly has learned from Donald Trump that like being dull as ditch water is not particularly advisable, was epic millennial candidate, biotech billionaire Vivek Ramaswamy, who, you know, his whole thing, like he's just having fun. You know, he knows he's not going to win. He's had a kind of improbable rise in the polls, you know, from sort of 2 or 3% to like, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9%. Big surge. We're all feeling the Vivek momentum. But, you know, he basically was just at all times taking the most rhetorically maximalist, you know, right wing position when they're asked about climate change. And, you know, Nikki Haley is sort of being like, well, climate change is real, but Joe Biden is helping China with his attempts to fight it and they don't work anyway. And then, yeah, Vivek is just like, drill, frack, burn, like climate change is a hoax, all that kind of stuff. He's just there to have fun. And the only moments in the debate that produced any comedy were the moments where you could tell that the other people on the stage, who were all professional politicians, were like genuinely very annoyed by having this like 38-year-old like whippersnapper on the stage sort of like sucking up the oxygen. Vivek was getting booed a fair bit. He was getting a lot of cheers as well, but, you know, he was getting booed a fair bit. And I really don't think it matters, you know, because the boos in a room like that are not really emblematic of anything. He clearly has learned from Trump that trying to sound revolutionary, like, you know, he was appealing to we need revolution and stuff like that, just sucking up all the oxygen on the stage and just getting attention. Like, I think he had the most speaking time in the debate, which is pretty astonishing. I think he understands that that is sort of an end in itself, and it doesn't really matter whether, you know, the crowd in the room likes you or whether, like, what you're saying is, like, even remotely, you know, substantive. I don't think it matters. Anyway, the debate was a throwback to 2012 because of how boring the candidates were and how boring, you know, the whole affair was. It was also a throwback to 2012 in, like, the way that if you looked at a lot of these mainstream media live blogs, like, how they talked about it, where they're, like, all talking about it, or not all of them, but heavily talking about this affair like this is just like a normal like pre-2016 Republican debate, where people are being like, oh, Doug Burgum is so charming, I expect he'll get a bump out of this. You know, we're feeling the Burgum momentum. We're like, wow, you know, in that last segment, you know, Nikki Haley really showed off her unique brand of competent pragmatism or something. And it's just like, guys, Donald Trump is the God Emperor of American conservatism now. He's not there because he doesn't have to be. He has like a 50-point lead. All these people are basically competing to see which of them is going to have the singular privilege of losing to Donald Trump from a prison cell by like 55 points or whatever. It's total kayfabe. And it was very funny to see sort of the normalcy emergency reflex kick in again and have all these people sort of, I don't speak about this in a tone that suggests that this is just, we're back in 2012 and yeah, conservative politics is quote unquote normal again. And of course, that's not even true because everything these people were saying was like completely unhinged, just unhinged in the like way that was considered respectable before Donald Trump came and said all the same stuff, but did it in his unique personal style. There was one other moment in the debate that I thought was very interesting and very funny. So Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, who was born, he's like only a few years older than us. I think he was born in 1985. He was born in Ohio, but his parents are from India. And so, you know, he believes in, all the American exceptionalism, you know, shit that like a guy who's made billions of dollars in biotech and has that background, you know, believes in. But at the end, when he was doing his closing statement, he did this whole like, you know, okay, folks, we need to get back to basics. This is not complicated. Like, we need to just not be afraid to speak the truth. Then he's like listing off like just a checklist of dumb conservative things like, you know, there are two genders. You know, we have to smash the administrative state. God is real, et cetera, et cetera. And the God is real one I've been thinking about for a long time, because the thing about Vivek Ramaswamy is that he's Hindu. So it's very funny. Like, what is he actually saying when he says God is real? Because presumably Mike Pence and the other evangelicals in the room, like officially they think he believes in like, I don't know, a pagan cult
or
something.
Well, as others have pointed out, he's a monotheistic Hindu. And therefore, basically, we're all talking about the same God, right? Whether he appears to us as a Shiva or as Jesus Christ or as the Buddha or et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, what you're describing just sounds like sort of like new agey, like postmodern religious belief. And it's like that shouldn't be compatible with like right wing evangelical Protestantism. But the fact that it like kind of is, or at least on a rhetorical level, I think is very interesting. And it's further to this thesis that, you know, Matt Chrisman and other people have advanced, that conservative Protestantism in the United States is actually just a new religion, where commitment to any kind of like deeper metaphysical beliefs about this is how the universe is structured and blah, 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 like the personal relationship with God and the way that strain of Protestantism has developed in the American context just means that like God is whatever whimsically is in front of you that you desire. It can be whatever you want it to be. It can be the U.S. Constitution and just, you know, a sort of right wing Republican nationalism. Like a guy like Vivek Ramaswamy, whose parents are immigrants, can be like, oh yeah, we need really restrictive border policies. And we need to like, at one point he said, we need to copy Israel's border policies, which it's like, buddy, I think if America did that, I'm not sure like your family would have been allowed in. But like, none of it matters. If you espouse the right reactionary beliefs, like it's perfectly compatible with right-wing conservative nationalism. And I think that's very interesting.
Never before was there a candidate like Donald J. Trump. Like him or not, Trump changed all the rules. Whether that's for the better or for the worst remains to be seen. Strap in for a wild ride as we examine Trump and his first term as President of the United States of America.
Well, we have a movie to discuss on this episode. Boy, do we ever. Luke is so angry at me. He's looking at me through the computer monitor with just rage and exasperation. Really more exasperation.
By the time you're all listening to this, I'm going on vacation next week. I'm going to be deep in the Canadian wilderness, somewhere probably near the center of Algonquin Park. You know, so this is actually a pre-record. We're recording this a little earlier than we normally would, so that Will has one in the can for next week. And I'm convinced that he has suggested this film, if you can call it that, as some kind of, I don't know, like just social experiment, like, or it's like, this is a prank. You're winding me up. Like, Will was texting me throughout this, which this thing that we watched on Tubi, which this is the worst thing we've ever watched. This is the most boring. I would rather watch something like absolutely like heinous and disgusting that at least had a pulse or some residue of like human involvement or craft. This was, like, you've joked about these things on Tubi, these documentaries being AI generated. This one almost certainly was AI generated. And Will was gaslighting me throughout this, is just constantly texting me being like, oh, this is so good. So what's the agenda? What's your agenda here? What's your agenda?
Are you finished? Well, I'm sorry you all had to listen to that. My agenda is that I actually care a lot about Luke. I care about Luke and his time, and I didn't want to have to make him sit through some long movie that he had to think about today. I said to Luke, listen, I love 2B movies. Neither of us wants to spend much time on this. Here's one that's 44 minutes. And also, Trump's in the air. We're feeling Trump right now. We just saw the mugshot. We just saw the Tucker Carlson interview. We're feeling Trump. So let's just watch a 44-minute thing. I have lunch to make anyway, so I'll throw it on, and we'll talk about that. See, that's because I care about Luke more than anything. I did this because I respect Luke and his time. But I do agree that this, you know, having said that, there's always a kernel of truth to these things. And longtime listeners will know that I, at least, have been deeply fascinated by the Tubi mines. And I'm not talking about like normal movies that are on Tubi, like just regular run of the mill bad movies, but the ones that appear to be auto generated, the ones that have Trump or Biden or Putin in the poster and are an hour long and they just have some generic title and they seem to be made for old people to fall asleep to. People who just love the news, people who want ambient news in their house, like their Yule log videos, but for the news. And in the past we've joked that, oh, these things like that documentary we watched about China and Joe Biden, or that you didn't watch it, but that Trump versus the Illuminati animated film that I watched, all these we've said they feel auto-generated. This one may have been auto-generated, although it does have a credited director.
Okay, not only does it have a credited director, okay, the voiceover, which there's no way that's like a human voiceover, credited as Mitch Kaman, C-M-A-N. Yeah. And I just want to say...
Which is what I was saying.
Come on, yeah. Man, no one believes in that. There's somebody called Hung Kim who is credited as the stunt coordinator. There's somebody else credited as the art director. Like, there's this huge, like, team of people who are almost certainly not people who actually exist, who are credited as being involved in this movie, which is basically, like, the equivalent of a sort of, like, a Wikipedia article with, like, a shitty AI voice, like, reading your Trump facts, and then, you know, a shitty slideshow attached, like, very little actual video footage. Like, it's mostly just, like, the video footage that there is reenactment footage, but often, like, it's only tangentially, it's, like, conceptually in a most abstract way related to what the voiceover is saying. So like, for example, there's a part where there's something about Congress and how it has checks and balances, and there's just a picture of a random legislative chamber that is visibly not the United States Congress. Or later there's something about, you know, refugees or something, and there's just like a picture of like four guys with sort of like suitcases looking a little bit rough walking through like ruins or something. And it doesn't really work, but it does inadvertently at times create a sort of outsider art vibe.
Okay, so first of all, well, we haven't mentioned the title. It's called Trump, the First Term. That's Trump, colon, the First Term. It's from the year 2020. It's on Tubi right now. You can watch it. I encourage you to watch it. You'll learn a lot. It's funny that you pointed out that this has a credited cinematographer because, you know, at the very end, there's a little bit of footage of a Trump rally, but I don't think otherwise there's a single original shot in the movie. It's all, if you went on, you know, e-stock, free clip art videos. Like, another part that I thought was hilarious was there's a bit where they're talking about Sean Spicer and alternative facts, and it just cuts to a random, like, thin guy giving a press conference to a few people. And it's like, I'm sorry, I know what Sean Spicer looks like. That's literally not Sean Spicer. But the director of this film, one Kim Harrington, their credits, literally dozens of movies like this, so many. There's one called Bernie, Man on a Mission.
Most of them look more interesting than this. There's one called Matrix, Are We Living in a Simulation? Avatars of the Astral Worlds, Shark Attacks, Danger of the Deep. That all sounds better than this.
How about this one? Elizabeth, Senator Warren's Fight to the Finish. We should have watched that. the Avatars of the Astral Worlds one really tickles me because it has like a blue person on the front of it, you know, like one of James Cameron's avatars. There's another one called Simply Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which, you know, perhaps we should also check that one out. So lots to explore in the Kim Harrington filmography. I would imagine we're dealing with an auteur. I would imagine that there are some similarities between all these films. So just a quick rundown about what we see in it. And we're not gonna spend too much time on this.
It's important to understand, this isn't a real movie.
No. This was as close to AI generated as you can get and still have human names that you could put at the end of it. But a few things that tickled me. There's some opening narration, and we've seen enough documentaries like this that they all have the same opening narration. And the narrator says, like him or not, Trump changed the rules. Whether that's a good thing or bad remains to be seen. And what's funny about that is this movie's called Trump the First Term. It was made in 2020. I think we're a little bit past the only time will tell qualifier. I think it's been seen if it's good or bad.
But that's how you know it's AI generated, because like AI, you know, what it can't do is give you like a direct, like it can't express an editorial opinion, right? It can just tell you what other people have said, because all it is aggregation. That's what this entire film was like, just aggregation.
I think you'll agree that it had a sort of liberal slant, though. Like when they were feeding articles into it, it was all like Atlantic, Newsweek, New York Times that generated this, right?
Well, the facts have a liberal bias. Many have said this.
Yowza! It's called Trump the First Term, and it's a real greatest hits. The first 20 or so minutes is all Putin, Russia stuff. It goes on to note that he has very few actual notable legislative accomplishments, despite a Republican House and Congress, which is my biggest beef with Donald Trump. He just didn't get enough done.
you and David Frum, that was the problem with Trump in David Frum's book, that he was divisive, and yeah, he wasn't going to get important legislative items like border security and tax cuts through, which Trump proved Mr. Frum wrong.
Much is made of the wall and its lack of progress. Watching this does kind of feel like having several years worth of news articles and think pieces all smushed together, because there were words and phrases and ideas and just kind of like lines of attack that I remember hearing all the time circa 2017. Like there was one moment when the narrator quotes some psychologist or social scientist somewhere who says that Trump is lacking many of the skills necessary in an effective leader, including empathy, resilience, controlling unproductive emotions. I'm just thinking of all the sort of like CNN afternoon, like time filling slots that had somebody who had written a book called like Trump, Anatomy of a Sociopath, that have them in front of a blackboard, like pointing at, you know, the indents on his skull, saying like, well, this is the part that has a lack of empathy. And I think what we've seen is that most leaders have empathy.
His use of Twitter has been unconventional for a president, initiating controversy and becoming news in their own right, with some scholars referring to it as the first true Twitter presidency. The Trump administration has described Trump's tweets as official statements by the President of the United States.
I'm sure I've told you this story before, but over the course of the first Trump term, which I like that the film, by the way, is called, you know, Trump the First Term, because saying it that way
sequel.
Yeah. But by the end of the Trump presidency, I had accumulated just this like massive stack of these books. You know, there were good books written about Trump. The folks at the Miami Herald sent me their investigative book about Mar-a-Lago. That was very good. But there was also things where it was like, you know, I don't know, there might have been three separate David Frum books that were all just the same book, you know, Trumpocracy, Trumpocalypse, Trump bad, whatever. Yeah. Really, really stupid. There was one, and look, I didn't read this book, but when I tell you what the book was, you'll understand why. But there was one that it was sent to me that was called Toddler in Chief, and the pitch for this book was, you know, effusively pitched to me by this publisher, and I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll look at it. And it was a chapter by chapter sort of rundown of different qualities Donald Trump has that resemble that of a child.
Oh, sure.
And I have to say, I don't think that sounds like a very interesting or insightful read.
Like he does doo-doo in his pants, for instance.
Right. He goes wah-wah. Really, really stupid.
There was a bit in the narration of this film where they mentioned that all of his mistruths have been characterized as a gaslighting tactic.
His falsehoods have become a distinctive part of his political identity, and they have also described as part of a gaslighting tactic. His White House has dismissed the idea of objective truth and his campaign and presidency have been described as being post-truth.
Folks, a gaslighting tactic.
People are saying it's a gaslighting tactic. I took a bunch of these books. I had way too many books in my apartment. Some of them, you know, just books you end up with because you reviewed them or you were going to review them and weren't able to or whatever. A lot of Trump books. And I took them to my local secondhand store. And, you know, they took a lot of them. And I remember the guy came back to the counter from the back and he was like, yeah, we'll take all these. But yeah, my manager says we're not allowed to take any more Trump books. So I like to imagine I've assuming I haven't made this joke already, but I like to imagine that there's like a secret elephant graveyard for like all the Trump books, like they did with the E.T. game, like Atari cartridges in the early 80s. A lot of shitty Trump books out there.
I mean, I'm sure there were a higher than normal number of books about Trump, but hardly unique to him. I mean, could you imagine being like one of the used bookstores in the early 80s that was getting all the Watergate books? In 2010, getting all those George W. Bush biographies that we used to see, like all those biographies that were sort of like positioning George Bush as, you know,
as Winston Churchill,
either that or like the Prince Hal to the underappreciative father. You know, that was a popular psychological reading at the time. Anyway, the end of the film, I'm sure you're all interested in how it concludes, kind of what the final thought, the summation. What are we to take from this? Well, it noted that the conditions that brought Trump to power, in fact, far preceded him, which is true. And that since being elected president of the United States of America, that's how I know the narration is good, because it says, since being elected president of the United States of America, they did the whole name. That's when you know you're coming home. You're delivering the final hammer blow. Donald J. Trump has taken America on a roller coaster that will be etched in the history books forever. As we approach a possible second term, all we can do is expect the unexpected. Will Sloan for Michael and Us.
So what is it with your obsession with these Tubi movies? Because genuinely, nothing scans for me at all. Like, there needs to be some evidence of, like, actual human involvement. And even if it's bad, there might be something interesting that can be drawn from the banal. But the type of banality I associate with these movies or whatever they are is just like, I can't really, they don't do anything for me, but you seem genuinely pretty obsessed with them, and I don't really understand why.
Well, it's manifold. I mean, I don't really enjoy the experience of watching them per se. I mean, just on a kind of textual level, I find them interesting as these aggregated documents. You know, we watched that shit one about U2, for instance, about all their philanthropy, Bono's philanthropy. And like, it's just kind of interesting to see, like, okay, if you tell either a computer or a poorly paid clickbait writer, or maybe both, create a middle of the middle of the middle of the middle thing about this subject, and this is what it turns out to be, I find some interest in that. I like imagining the audience for them. I like to watch them and try to figure out, like, who's watching this and why? What is the appeal? Because they are inexplicable to me as well on some level. There are so many entertainment options out there. And the fact that these, like, offer so little, and yet, you know, there's a whole market for them.
You're probably right that it is for people where they have such a news brain that they're so, like, yeah, they're so addicted to the news that, yeah, like, when they're winding down at the end of the day and, like, MSNBC has too much caffeine or whatever, or Fox or whatever they watch, you know, they need something, like, just sort of ambient. Like, this is, like, their cup of herbal tea that they have before bed or whatever. Which, like, that makes sense as an explanation, although just, like, on a visceral level to me, it does not make sense. Because let me tell you, I've actually been watching an inordinate amount of news myself lately. I've been watching lots of MSNBC clips, because that's where you find stuff about the Trump indictment. And, like, they're so thin, even when there's actually something going on. Like, you watch these clips and you might get, like, if you're lucky, there'll be 30 seconds of interesting footage. And then there might be, like, one fact in a 15-minute clip that you want to learn or something. Like, you, like, watch, oh, here's a clip about the Georgia indictment. Oh, that's interesting. Well, this is in Georgia, so Trump can't pardon himself for this, even if he gets elected president again. Like, you might learn something like that. And then almost always two-thirds of the clip is going to be whoever the host host is talking to some would-be expert, and it's mostly just the expert just sort of riffing and like barely containing their glee about, you know, the expert will always be like some former like federal prosecutor, if we're talking about the Trump indictments anyway, and then they'll just talk for like 5.5 minutes about how this is actually really serious for Donald Trump, and it's more serious than the other things that have preceded it, because yeah, it's an unprecedented for a former president to be indicted like this, to say nothing of multiple times. And you watch one of these clips and you've kind of seen them all. Now, I'm watching these chopped up and put onto YouTube, but there are people who just have like, they have this as a channel and it's on all day. And like, I do understand to some extent, I understand being interested in the news and sort of having the news be entertainment to a point. But like, for it to be entertaining, there has to be novelty. Like watching the Republican debate last week, granted, I did not find it as entertaining as I was hoping, but there is a certain spontaneity. It's like nothing here is, it hasn't happened before. You don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. They're going to be catty with each other and nasty and whatever. And like that actually kind of works as like infotainment to me in a way that like, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how people watch cable news all day. It's baffling.
Well, I mean, cable news also compared to this documentary, at least there is a level of suspense. You know, cable news is constantly promising that if you keep watching, you're going to get some new revelation or some new insight. And as you say, there might be like 2 insights an hour, if that, but the suspense is built around that. With the indictments, with Mueller Russiagate shit, it was always like, keep tuning in, we're gonna get it. Pretty soon you're gonna get a huge thing.
Yeah, there'd be those Twitter threads from like news addicted people that'd be like, we just found out that Trump met with Sergei Pergoninovich in Minsk and it's only 11 a.m.
Right. Oh, and then when you're not getting the insight, you're getting a constant parade of guests who are at least giving you a little bit of spice. You're getting Dr. whoever from the Institute of Policy Studies at whatever, who's written a new book called Fast Food President that analyzes what Donald Trump's diet says about him. Spoiler, nothing good. And, you know, he's there talking and it's like, okay, well, here's a new guy saying a slightly new variation on the thing that we heard before. Whereas this documentary is, yeah, it's for the people who are seriously news-pilled, going to bed, who only want to hear the things they've already heard before, like a favorite song. They just want to hear the same Russiagate facts again, which is baffling to me, but it speaks for itself. Or maybe it's just a huge con. Maybe it's just they know that people are going to be searching. Maybe nobody has ever reached the end of this. Maybe it's just people who have clicked on it, have watched 2 minutes and have determined what it is. But hey, the company's already got your ad revenue. So suckers.
You say no one's gotten the end of this, Will, but except for 2 very intrepid podcasters.
That's right. Oh, and the last thing that I find interesting about this is just, yeah, I find anything that smacks of AI, anything that makes me more cognizant of, you know, the explosion of, for want of a better term, distribution channels for cinema. So many things have sprung up in the form of what we might call a movie and how they keep, and you know, you can apply this to just any content, like all of the clickbait websites. I don't know if you've been looking on Google News lately, but if you search anything on Google News, you will get, you know, maybe you'll get 1 New York Times article and you'll get 300 articles from these random sites that are just like aggregating old facts that are like, hey, remember this? Well, we're going to tell you again about, let's look back at this fact from 40 years ago again. And they somehow get on the news site. I'm interested in just this explosion of shit.
I think it's pretty alarming because if you imagine like this technology, this software getting even 15% better. I mean, you know, obviously we've talked about it before, but one of the things that's at stake in the, you know, SAG-WGA strike is the studio executives wanting to use, you know, AI, wanting to use AI simulacra of actors and actresses and such. And if this technology gets 15% better, I mean, across the board with entertainment, media, there's so much austerity that's happened in most industries already. There's so much shedding of talent. There's so much less overall quality because everything is done at a cost and just more and more to enrich shareholders, give them greater and greater returns while, you know, the quality of whatever the product is gets worse and worse and worse. And if this technology, which I think is for the most part at the moment is not really producing anything reliable, example, it's fucking up a lot. There was an AI-generated news article, like a tourism article, I don't know if you saw this, a few weeks ago, that was recommending like the best places to visit in Ottawa. And there was like this whole effusive write-up a computer did about some Ottawa area food bank. And it was like written up like it was this restaurant that you had to visit. But again, imagine this technology getting, you know, 15% better or whatever. And then it's like every movie will be like it'll look like The Flash, but it'll be worse. And that'll be the entirety of like media and culture. And then I don't know, there will just be some like boutique versions of things that'll be really expensive and like harder to access for like, you know, some really small kind of highbrow market. And then, yeah, everything else would just be schlock. I can't wait.
Before we go, I just want to ask the Trump mugshot. What do you think? It's all I'm seeing on my social media feeds.
I gotta say, I thought it was pretty funny when I first looked at it. And further to what I was saying earlier in our discussion today, it was so quickly just like memeified. It was just everywhere. I stopped having any relationship to with. It couldn't just exist in my mind's eye as like, oh, that's a funny thing. Look at this like stupid expression he did. Because you're right away, you're seeing like the Dinesh D'Souza tweet about it, where he's like, Trump is now officially the most gangsta person of our time or whatever. Then you're seeing all the reactions, the people making fun of that. You're seeing the meta debates upon meta debates. And yeah, it's like, I don't know, just nothing can just exist anymore. You know, can't even enjoy a goddamn mugshot of Donald Trump. I tell you.
Now watch this drive.
Siena College Research Institute's sixth presidential expert poll, released in February 2019, placed Donald Trump 42nd out of 44, ahead of Andrew Johnson and James Buchanan. Since being elected as President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump has taken the world on a rollercoaster ride that will be etched into the history books now and forever. As we approach his possible second term as the most powerful man in the world, all we can do is expect the unexpected. Historically speaking, that has now become the new normal.